Hey everybody, welcome back to Up the Vibe. And today I'm joined by David John, who is a serving police officer in Essex and also the founder of the SEPI agency, which stands for Supernatural, Extraterrestrial and Paranormal Investigations Agency. Hi David, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. A bit warm tonight, as you just mentioned, and
It
well
is.
done, and getting the right word in there on what SEPI stands for.
Yeah, it's a long one, isn't it? So tell us a bit about your background
Yeah.
and how you got into the topic of the paranormal.
How far does anyone get to the paranormal? I think it's generally it's a calling or an experience, I think, which pulls most people into this area. Some people are very good at ignoring it, and other people, like ourselves, are not so good at ignoring it. We want to know what's happening or what happened, or try and put some rationale behind the experiences that we'll go through. So very early on, I had some odd experiences at a very young age. I mean, I'm talking the first one was I was a newborn. Seeing myself levitating above my baby self and talking down to myself, as in give myself reassurance, because I was left in a very precarious situation, let's say. But literally newborn, probably no long older than a few months old, which I know that will astonish a lot of people, because surely can I have a memory that far back? But I do, and it's clear enough, and it's clear enough for me years later to describe my grandmother's room to my mother. And she said, yeah, that's exactly how your grandmother's room was laid out, including the padded bar in the corner back in the 70s that most people had, and the bronze artifacts that have been hanging off of it. So I've got all that correct. And I had another one when I was a child, bounced up and down on my cot, screaming my lungs out. See my poor mother just not coping with this child, like demon child, just screaming the house down. But I remember an adult voice in my head, which was me, it wasn't anybody else, saying, "I think she's had enough. I think I need to give her a break." Which is not the words I could have said at that age, because I probably wasn't able to say most of those actual words. So that was another one. And then the big one for me, which really ch changed everything for me, was when I was around six. I think I was six, 5 or 6 years old. And my father, the nighttime routine for my mum and dad was basically my father taking me upstairs, put me to bed, he closed my door, but he'd leave the hallway light on for me. So I could see a strip of light beneath the door. And then he'd normally wait for a couple of minutes, just to hear that I'm settling, and he'd go downstairs. And that was just a general thing. And it's just before my brother was born. I'm 7 years older than him, so it's before he was born. But this particular night, my dad done the usual thing, shut the door, stood there for a few minutes. But this time, he seemed to linger for a lot longer, which, it was okay. But as the time went on, and it seemed like the night going on, he was still there. I still saw the 2 feet shadows breaking the light beneath the door. And I did think, why is he there? And I couldn't sleep, because I couldn't understand why my dad was still there, outside the door for that long. So I got brave and I got out of bed, which I thought, oh, I'm definitely going to get in trouble for. He's definitely going to go, what are you doing out of bed? But it was a long time. Not that I had much concept of time at that age, but I remember thinking it wasn't normal. And it was very quiet. So I went to the door, turned the handle, opened the door. My dad wasn't there. The light was on, and my mum and dad's bedroom door was shut, which generally means they're in bed. So that was a bit strange, but that wasn't the strange bit. So I walked out into the hallway, and it's a very small masonette we used to live in. So for any American audiences, a masonette is basically a three bedroom house or another three bedroom house on top of it. And we're in a council estate, that's why I got brought up in a council estate. But upstairs only consisted of two bedrooms, actually, and one bathroom and a hallway. And obviously stairs going down to a kitchen, a hallway, and a front room. That was it, a living room. So it's a very small place. So I'm now standing at the top of the landing with the light on, looking down at the stairs, which are very dark. And I realized that there was no sound, no TV on, no lights flickering downstairs. Mum and Dad's door was shut. So I realized it must have been a lot later than I realized, than I thought, sorry. And then I got the got weird tingling sensation over my skin, like all my hair stood up on the end, like a static is the only way I can describe it. I think my head all was literally sticking up. I smelt a weird smell, which I'll come back to in a minute. Why that's important. And I got this overwhelming urge to step out across the stairs in a parallel manner rather than walk down the stairs. So you can imagine I'm now going to walk parallel, sorry, yeah, or sort of horizontally out across the stairs rather than go down them, which would mean obviously I'm going to fall because I'm not going to place my foot on a stair. I'm going to place it in midair in front of me. So I struggled with this, like, what am I doing? Why have I couldn't understand why I was getting compelled to do it. And I just heard a voice or felt, I don't really know what it was, but something was telling me that you'd be okay. Just trust us or trust me. I don't know if it was me. So I took the step and I didn't fall. So I've got one foot now out in front of me and one foot still on the stair. I take the other foot towards the first foot. I'm now standing above the stairs in midair, literally levitating.
Right.
Not, I haven't gone down an inch, up in it, nothing, just a straight line. So I took another step and another step and another step. And now I'm probably hovering about five stairs deep now. And I'm still there.
So
I've
this is
still
an
got
out of
this
body experience.
electricity around. I don't think so. And I'm going to come to why I think that in a second,
Okay.
actually. So now I'm being drawn towards the wall. So you imagine that the stairs are going down. So the wall in front of me is sloping down at a 45 degree angle. But I'm now going towards it. And I'm getting closer and closer. And I'm now not walking, I'm being pulled. And as I get to the wall, I sort of brace for impact, as they say. Thinking, well, I'm going to hit the wall. When I hit the wall, what's going to happen? Am I going to suddenly fall? I didn't know. I kind of went into the wall and I saw slats behind the plasterboard. I smelled another smell. That was it. Nothing else. I don't remember anything past that. I don't remember. I don't even remember if I remembered it the next morning as a child. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. It's so long ago. But that was it. And then the many years later, I'm working on the building site. I'm now in my early 20s. And I was a bit strapped for cash. My dad's in the building trade. And he said, oh, come and help the brickies, like do some labouring work. So I'm there smashing a wall down with a sledgehammer, old building. And I put my hammer through a wall and saw, I had a memory trigger of seeing these slats behind the plaster. They're very thin slats. I think in the old days they used to build walls like this and then plaster over them. So a lot of old buildings probably have that construction behind. They won't
Yeah,
do it. They don't
we've
do
got
that
bits of
now.
that, yeah. Kind of that horsehair and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So, and then I saw that. I saw the flashback all over again. And I smelt one of the smells, which was brick dust, like old decaying brick dust, like the, you imagine with old dirty cobwebs in it type of dirt. That's the smell. The smell thing triggered the memory and the visual of the slats all just came together. And I just stood there a bit like, oh my God, that was real. Like it was real. And then, I still put it to the back of my mind. And many years later, when I got to about 50, my wife goes to me, oh, what do you want from your daughter? I've got a small daughter. as a sort of joke present. I said, "Oh, you know what? I'd like one of those plasma balls. I've never had one. You know, those things you put your fingers on, the spheres, and all the plasma electricity goes to your fingers." So I just bought one of those. I've never had one before. I just think they're a bit fun. So she got me one. So I put it in my bedroom. I turn it on, and I'm being very childish. I'm playing around with it, just mesmerised by the plasma. It's really cool, really, when you put your fingers on how it reacts. But then I realised what the other smell was, the first smell, when I was in the hallway. It was the same as the smell that this plasma ball was giving out. And if you do play with your plasma ball for any amount of time, you will smell a kind of a disinfectant type smell, which is actually ionised air. So I then realised that at the age of six, that smell in the hallway that flooded my hallway and that electricity was ionized air. Something physical was happening to me. So when people say to me, "Oh, was you spiritually abducted? Was it a dream? Was it a..." I can pretty much deduce from that evidence and the sensations that I had that it was a real event. Because I smelt the smells. I saw things behind the plasterboard, which I wouldn't have known at that age would even be there. I smelt not just one smell, I smelt two smells, like the horrible brick dust as I started to go through the wall and the ionized air. So that really was a very early on profound experience, as it probably sounds. But that probably compelled me at that early age to start getting into UFOs. So, although I may not remember that, something then changed me. And I was that geeky kid that got his scrapbook. And every time there was a UFO in the newspaper, I'd cut it out and put it in my scrapbook, or I'd go to the library, or I'd find UFO pictures of UFOs in magazines. I'd cut them out. And I had a whole scrapbook just full of science fiction stuff and UFOs. And it just started a lifetime obsession, really. But as I got into adulthood, I was just kind of disillusioned with the whole thing. I went to a UFO group once when I think I was in my 20s, and it was just ridiculous. It was just full of egos, and my ghost story is better than your ghost story, or yeah, well, I've actually been abducted. It was just a case of like, well, I must be more important because many things happen to me situation. And I just wasn't there for that. I was there like most people looking for some answers, maybe. And maybe even just to try to find some validation, really. Like I'm not alone in this experience. And I don't know if I was abducted. I don't know. Even if I was, I don't even know if it had been alien abduction or worse than alien abduction, a government abduction, because to me that's worse. That has got to be the worst type of abduction, the unsanctioned ones on the black governments, that operate in the dark and under dark budgets and things like that. That would be far worse, I think, than actually being abducted by an alien. But I don't know. I can't say what happened really because I don't have any recall. Saying that though, I'm trying to find a person that can take me back to that time, a regressionist maybe, and like
QHHT, have you heard of that?
see if they can. Sorry?
QHHT?
No.
No, that's something that came from, I
What's
think, Dolores Cannon, and that's about using therapy to heal and to go back and re repair traumas, go back and discover what might have happened. So have a look at
Okay.
that. Might be helpful. But yeah, so
Yeah, absolutely.
you've had all these experiences, and
Yeah.
you've ju now as an adult you've joined the police force, but you've
Yeah.
got these things are still with you. So I guess that's why the SEPI agency has started.
Yeah, I mean, there's been other things too. I have seen lights in the sky and the usual stuff. And it was last year I was pretty much attacked by something in a room that I couldn't see, which I never really did believe could happen. It didn't harm me, but to this day, I've never known any spirit thing to harm anybody. You know, like proper harm. And it's not like the horror films, luckily, because if it was, I think we'd be living in a very terrifying world. But yeah, something weird happened last April, and that made me go, I think it's time to start a SEPI agency, because I'd been thinking about it for many years. So through the police experience, I served at a national crime agency for 4.5 years as an officer with them. For those not familiar with the NCA, they are the UK equivalent of the FBI out in the States. Everybody's familiar with the FBI throughout the world, but not everyone's familiar with the NCA, but they do pretty much the same task. They deal with you know, organized, serious and organized crime domestically and globally. So it's quite a unique organization to be a part of, and I very much enjoyed my time there. I then have become what's known as a special constable within Essex Police. So I am a police officer, fully qualified, but I volunteer my time. So it's not my full-time role. The full-time role is a government contractor. Because of my security clearances that I gained in the NCA, I managed to keep hold of those in contracts for the government, which is what I do now. So I have those still under my belt, and that's how I earn my living. But I've spent 10 and a half years as a police officer with Essex Police, and it's taught me so many things. I've had so many experiences that, you know, not normal people would have. Obviously, the training has been really fantastic. I'm trained to interview people, you know, suspects and things like that. And I work some time with CID. I'm doing some time with CID at the moment, as well as uniform policing. So it's given me a wealth of experience, which I've now turned to the SEPI agency, and I've pretty much decided that I was going to use policing principles and the code of ethics and cookie cut them into the SEPI agency and create a para investigations agency that would do it correctly by gathering what we call best evidence, conducting interviews properly, gathering witness accounts, which is very much akin to taking a police statement. We do it softer, of course. We're not, you know, putting people under a spotlight into an interview room and going like, tell me of your experience. It's not as bad as it sounds. But we do assessments throughout the whole time. So when somebody does report something to us, we carry out a first assessment, like, you know, is this achievable? Are we gonna, is this something that's ongoing, a continued threat or concern for the subject? You know, we work out a like a pathway of resolving the issue. Some things can't be resolved. So giving me a static image of a light in the sky from 12 years ago, that's never going to be resolved. But it's still worth recording it. So it won't be an investigation. It'd be just something that we put onto our database and record and gather the information for. And we've got an online database now. 3 months ago, I didn't have it. So it's called Storm. So anybody in the police will know that name straight away, because Storm is the system used by quite a lot of police forces still when you report an incident. So when you call 999, the call taker is using a system called Storm to record all the details, which then gets allocated to an officer on the grounds. You know, that I've missed out loads of steps in there, by the way. There are loads of steps, but you know, you get the gist. So they use Storm, and I've developed my own online Storm to record all of our incidents. So we can create an incident, delete it, amend it. We can add comments, upload files, like videos and photos. And the idea is that it's all on an SQL database. So the idea is that I gather as much information as possible. I then can use that data, then plot incidences where they're happening, what sites they are. And of course, we don't specialize in just one area. So we're not just only taking UFO incidences. We're not just taking hauntings. We're doing the whole spectrum, hence the name of the agency. So we want to know about anything supernatural, anything extraterrestrial, anything paranormal. And anything that falls in between those cracks, basically, we'll do as well. So We are looking at the whole spectrum. So unlike MUFON, who are primarily interested in UFOs, we're doing more than that. We're trying to plot the paranormal stuff as well, because a lot of it is relatable. I hear this quite a lot, that there's poltergeist activity reported when there's UFO sightings are happening. I've even heard that with Bigfoot stuff too, which is quite surprising. But this weird stuff happens that way because we don't just live in a normal dimensional field. We're intermingling with extra dimensional fields all the time. So it's not unheard of. It's not beyond the realms of impossibility, therefore, to presume that nothing, that they're not related. And it's like going back to the policing thing again. If we're looking at a crime, we need to look at what the motives are. What's the motive? Who are the key players in that? Who's a suspect? Who's a victim? Who's a witness? And we'll break it down into those core components. And we'll look at that. We'll look at all the people. We'll look at any of the motives, what the skill sets may be, what the medical history is, even if they consent to provide that information. It's all by consent, by the way. So if you do report an incident to us, we do ask, do you consent for this data to be put into a database? And if they say yes, but I don't want it pub to make it make public, then we just it'd be anonymized if we use it for public use. So eventually the data that we hold will be publicly available to people, but not individuals, data. So we're very conscious of GDPR laws for here in the UK and similar laws across the world too. So we wouldn't be putting your name and address on out to the public. It'll be handled in a correct manner, very carefully. But we've just got to gather that data. I mean, that's where it starts. We've got to start getting that going and get as much information as possible. And then we can start making links. And that's the idea. So we've got a very, very different approach to everybody else that doing para investigations. There's some people have given me good feedback and bad feedback, and I think all feedback's good. Bad feedback just means you've got an opportunity to change it or to turn it into something good. So one of the bad feedbacks were people may be intimidated by the fact that you're using policing techniques or that you're a police officer. And I have SEPI officers, so they're people that I've trained on how to take a witness account. And they trained on how to do an interview. We have no powers, no lawful powers. So we don't, none of that is in play. None of that pressure is there. We do use, tactically good comms with people to make sure they're not feeling intimidated or pressured into anything. And we record everything that we can so that, the subject is safeguarded and we're safeguarded as well. And safeguarding for us is very important. So if we do have an incident, which I, after assessments, we feel maybe this person could do with a bit more help rather than our type of help, we are happy to have that discussion with them and recommend, that they seek a bit of extra help or some family support or something like that. So we don't just drop them if we feel like these, because we've had some of fantastical stories already. Pretty much in the first month, I had a few that was just ridiculous, to the point where you just it can't be. And I've got I'm pretty good with intuition with people, I'd like to say. And if I start seeing red flags, I do more digging, and then if I find more red flags, I don't bother. So if people want to come to us, then if you're faking anything, don't come to us because we will find out.
Well, this
Also,
brings
throughout
me
my
on to the Jerusalem 2011 UFO incident, which is a video. I'll put a link below about it. But do you want to describe that and give us a bit of detail on that? Because I think it does give a sense of the level of I guess scrupulous attitude you have to finding out evidence and to figure out what's actually going on.
So the Jerusalem UFO incident, that to me, when I saw that video, I was amazed. So for those who are not familiar with it, it's back in 2012, this bright object came down and hovered over the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. Now, the Dome of the Rock in itself is a very sacred site for Muslims and Christians and Jews. It's a site where Jesus Christ supposedly ascended to heaven. It's also the same point where Jehovah also ascended to heaven, which is weird in itself. Years apart, and same story. And it's also the Temple Mount. It's the first temple of Solomon and King David. So it's a very sacred site, and it's also supposed to be the resting place for the Ark of the Covenant. So I've always been very fascinated by the Dome of the Rock. So to see this bright object come down at night time, 1 in the morning, and hover over the Dome of the Rock, flash twice, and then rapidly ascend within a blink of an eye, I was absolutely fascinated by it, and I thought that's just amazing. But I let it, many years have passed. So back in January of this year, I decided I want to investigate that. I know it's old, it's years old now, but there were multiple videos of the same event, which is quite unusual. So I started doing it, and my intention, and hand on heart, my intention was to prove it to be a real occurrence and to expose any, scrupulous government agencies that are trying to cover it up, and keep the truth from us all. And because that's where my head was, that this is real. Someone's trying to cover it up, and I'm going to expose them. So I started digging for the different videos. I've got seven in total. I come my career, I've been very IT literate, so I'm quite technical. I used to put networks together, for example, many years ago. So I'm, technically, I'm very good with Photoshop. So I used to be a web designer many years ago as well, as well as a web programmer. I've done it all in IT, so I'm very good with Photoshop. I started learning DaVinci Resolve back in October last year, which is a software video editing suite for those who don't know what it is. But that's a very good tool when you're analyzing videos, because you can load them into the tool and literally break them down frame by frame. That's what I started doing. I started getting all the videos, and I thought to myself, if these videos are correct, then those two flashes that this object does should all synchronize. And when those two flashes flash, then the object should move all at exactly the same time. And I thought, I'm just going to just test that that's correct. So I analysed, and cut a long story short, things weren't quite matching. For example, one of the videos shot by US tourists that were there, the object didn't flash at all in their video. And yet, six other videos recorded the two flashes. So there's the first little red flag. And then I started seeing slight delays, and one of the objects, there was a it flashed twice but hung around for about two frames. But in the other videos, it was gone immediately. So I had another red flag. So I kept digging into it. I was literally painstakingly going it through, comparing both, side by side, going through each frame, which wasn't an easy task, but that's what we did. And then the real clanger for me, which is the moment where I went, oh, crap. Because it proved to me that it was all fake. And that was not even in the video, it's with the audio. People always overlook the audio when they're studying these things. Never overlook the audio. So I sliced the audio out of these videos and put them under the microscope, as it were. And I found brand new evidence that no one's ever released before on YouTube. That proved that, unfortunately, the Jerusalem UFO incident wasn't real. And that was in the fact that there was a lovely American lady from Tennessee, saying very clearly in two of the videos that she'd seen these objects before in Tennessee, but never like this. Words to that effect, she says. So there was two videos taken from the same tourist group, but from slightly different angles. So bear that in mind. They were both in the same spot at the same time, and you can hear the lady from Tennessee very clearly in one of the videos, and faintly in the other. So she's probably about 10 foot away, if that, I'd estimate. So what it where it went wrong for the video editors that put this together is that she says, when the object's hovering above the dome of the rock, she says, I've seen these in Tennessee before, but never like this. It flashes twice, it disappears. On the other video, taken only 10 foot away, the object hovers, flashes twice, disappears, and then she says, I've seen these in Tennessee before, but never like this.
Okay.
But the problem we have there is that in one video, she says it whilst the object is present, and in the other video, she says it's after it's already departed. So we have an anomaly. So that made me go, and then I start listening to the audio tracks even more, and then realised that it was recorded during the day. You can hear the hustle and the bustle of people. Not 1 o'clock in the morning in Jerusalem, you can hear it. And then just if people could say, well, you think it's during the day, but how do you know? I can tell you how, because we hear another lady from America saying, "Wouldn't it be nice to come back during the night?"
Okay. Yeah, that's a
Which
tip.
means she was saying it during the day.
Yeah. Well, while
So,
I'm watching those videos,
and that was the moment made me go.
watching those videos, it was the links between the people as well, the guy who ran a, and he was, they're all actors, and they, I think they ran a, was it filming together? They all learned how to
Yes,
film. So the links
Vladilovich, his name is.
the links
So,
that I think
yes.
that's a big clue as well.
Yeah, so as I said, I break things down very methodically. So it's not just about studying the video. I want to know who's posted it, why they posted it, what their backgrounds are, and using open source investigation techniques, which is not intrusive. We're not gathering data that is not publicly known. So open source investigation means that we're using social media and the internet to gather the information, so anybody can gather it. So using that medium, I managed to get some information on some of the key players, especially Gledovich, who is the original guy that uploaded the video that went viral across the world. He's responsible for that. And you'll see also in my video that I've proved that he was in two places at exactly the same time, 10 kilometers away. I've got him driving a car with students in it. And I've got him also taking the video 10 kilometers away from it, literally from the other side of the Dome of the Rock. You can't be in two places at once, unfortunately. And he made a real big error by being the driver of the car and turning around for the camera for a split second. And I managed to freeze frame that, and it was really clear. And I found his picture on Facebook. You put them together, it's the same man. There's no It's beyond reasonable doubt, as the police would say, it's the same man. And that again just made me quite annoyed, quite angry, because for 10, 11, 10, 12 years or so, I believed it to be true, just like everybody else. And I wanted it
Well,
to be
there's a
true,
lot of people who are quite
moreover. I did.
skeptical, and I think quite rightly so. And I think your video points out is there are fakes out there, and I think most people know that. But I think a lot of people believe that even if it's only 1%, 5% that are truly real, that still shows us there's something going on out there, which is the bulk of
Still
why
enough.
we're interested in the topic. So we can accept that some aren't, and I think it's great to have the attitude you had to try and really truly debunk this particular one. And
Well, that video is supposed to be a 15-minute video. It turned into a 49-minute video because I kept finding more and more evidence. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say, I'm not the type of person to say that's fake and just leave you hanging like most people will do. I will say it's fake because X, Y, Z. And that's what I've done in this video. That's what turned into a 49-minute video, because I felt I had to justify every point why I felt it was fake. And I keep saying in my video, I did not want it to be fake. I wanted it to be true with all my heart. I really did. And nobody's more disappointed than me to find that evidence, which you cannot refute. And people have tried to refute that, even still with me, especially one of the characters that I named in the video, who uploaded a video, who apparently is the second coming of Jesus Christ, apparently. So I've upset him now, which is quite ironic. Apparently, I've upset Jesus Christ. Not many people can say that, can they? But he said that the whole event was real and was staged for his benefit. So it was meant to be a sign for him to go and do whatever he does, you know. So
That's
he
strange,
has to
isn't it? Yeah.
believe then that it was real. So
I mean,
I do
is
actually
there a potential,
understand.
and just being devil's advocate here, is there a potential that it was real, but it wasn't captured, and someone decided to try and capture it to reveal it to the world? To kind of give it.
Genuinely, if you've got one fake video of the same event, it throws everything else into question.
Yeah.
How can you then trust any of them? And I would almost agree with you and say, yeah, you know what, the others might have been fake, but the first one was probably real. Unfortunately, the first video was taken by one guy that was already in a different place at the same time, so that even wasn't real. None of them are
Yeah,
real. And one of them was
there's too many red
fantastic because they'd
flags.
really put a lot, too many, yeah. And one of them was fantastic, video 7, as I refer to it in my YouTube investigation, where they've taken the time to actually put a UFO on a screen. I had this mysterious monk walking down the stairs who
Oh,
drops a
yeah,
set
that
of
one,
keys
yeah.
in front of the. Yeah, it's like, okay, let's use our logic here. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, middle of Jerusalem. You're standing on the West Wall. A weird monk guy comes walking past you. You're there with your video camera or your phone camera, and a monk, a religious person, drops his keys in front of you. My question is to you, what would you do if a monk dropped his keys in front of you?
Yeah,
What would you
probably
do?
get a bit freaked out by it, I think. Or try and help, or try and pick them up, or
Now, what
do something.
would you? Do you return them to him or?
I'd probably be involved with, yeah, say, if you drop these.
Exactly. And that is the problem with that video. The monk drops his keys and the guy just picks them up and Dags makes no effort, none whatsoever, to say, excuse me, you've dropped your keys. And not only that, which I didn't even bother showing in this video because it's just ludicrous. He then goes on to look at the keys, which has a Knights Templar emblem on
Yeah. Yeah.
them. So there you
It
go.
just gets weirder
Okay.
and
And then this
weirder.
great big ruddy, this great big ruddy sorceress appears out of nowhere. And it's really good effect. So whoever done that video, you know what? Well done. It was really done well. I'll give you that. The music you put over it was awful, awful music. But the UFO was done really well, so I'll give them that. It's a good piece of special effects there. The rest of it, they just what they've done is they've just gone too far with it, and that was a downfall. If they just left it at one or two videos, you know what? They might have got away with it, but they got silly and started releasing one more, another one, another one. And I obviously go into persons of interest in my video, like who are the people that uploaded it. So Gleda Lovich was a film producer and an ex-actor. What's his motive? Probably wants, a million subscribers on his YouTube channel, like we all wouldn't mind, would we? One of the other characters is he teaches film production in a college in Israel. And the other guy, the other students take on the videos, one of the really good ones, actually. They're all students at the same college, being taught by the same teacher, so they're all related. Then we've got a guy standing on a roof at a hotel, which I found out wasn't even the name of the hotel at the time. It was a different name, even back in January of 2012, so that was wrong. And then we've got the two American tourist videos, which again, as I've proved and explained, they don't match. It didn't synchronize properly, so there's just too many. So for someone to argue that one of those videos out of the seven is real, I'm sorry, I can't go with that, because there's too many connections with each other, too many anomalies which I've highlighted now, and nobody in the whole time since 2012 has found the audio evidence that I've done And nobody has spotted the fact that Gledelovich was in two places at the same time either. So I'm that is a good example to the depths that SEPI agency will go to.
Yeah, and also on the SEPI agency's site, there's a few links as well. I wonder if we could dive into those. One on extra-dimensional entities. Do you want to explain that?
So with the with us, we don't just investigate. We're not just a para-investigations team, like most people might think. We don't go chasing saucers and ghosts for fun. We try and look at new hypotheses and try to present new explanations for things that are happening. And we do that from a common sense and a scientific viewpoint as we can do. The science is not going to serve you very well in this subject matter because science is very restricted. So anybody with a science qualification to me is probably not very helpful because they're going to hit a certain wall and then stop because for them the reality can't be and they can't seem to push themselves through it. And they forget that the whole reason behind science is to exactly do that, to push yourself through that wall, to question reality, and to question the reality on reality. They just don't want to go past that threshold where they think, if I do this, I'm going to lose respect for my peers. If I do this, my department will no longer get funded. I'm still believing in the concept that talked to me from books from 100 years ago. And science is just. They're letting us down. They are totally letting us down. And I think we just need a new, fresh start to it now. And the SEPI agency would love to onboard scientists as researchers to work with them and say, look, can we please just get over this hurdle? Not everything can be weighed and measured and poked and prodded, unfortunately. And I'd just love them to just start going, yeah, we've got to start working together. And stop looking at people like para investigations teams that have some value and just treating them like they're all absolute lunatics or they'll wear tinfoil hats in the evening. Some do, don't get me wrong. A lot do, don't get me wrong, but not all of them. Okay, there's real evidence out there. So we are trying to push out new hypotheses. So EDEs are, I say, the old word for EDEs would be demons. So, and I don't like using the word demons because it's got religious connotations to it. It's got, all that fear attached to the word demon. So, if you say to somebody, oh, I think you've got a demon attachment, they're already going to be put into fear mode and actually will panic. And you've only got to look at the Hollywood films just to push that forward even more, that agenda. And they're great films. I love watching them. Good for entertainment, but it doesn't work that way. They're not doing that. Okay, it's not what's happening. And thank the gods that they're not doing that as well, because that'd be terrifying. But they're just not doing that. So I decided to look at this the demon issue and separate it out from the religious fear factor and go, right, what are these things? Because they appear to have been around for a very, very, very long time, far longer than us probably. They don't seem to die. Don't seem to be off this world, but seem to interact with this world, albeit weakly. People think they're strong, they're not actually that strong. They talk to people quite often in their heads, so you get a lot of people going, I've got voices in my head. I, for one, would never ignore someone that says they're hearing voices in their head, like a doctor would do, or a psychologist would do, and go, well, that's just, this is their own faults. We all know what our internal dialogue sounds like. You know, when you talk into yourself in your head, what that voice sounds like. You know, it's your words. The thing to pick up on here when you're talking about people hearing voices in the head that are not actually their own thoughts is the words that are being used by the entities. And maybe they've got a different voice, but that's not unusual, really, because they can mimic. But it's dialogue. So you need the scientists, the psychologists, doctors, they need to be studying what is being said to that person and literally write, ask that person, go, can you write down what you just said? And just write down a dialogue and then study the dialogue of the entity or the voice to the dialogue to the person when they're not hearing the voices. And they're going to be two different things. And why are they two different things? Because they are two different entities. So I do actually believe wholeheartedly that extra dimensional entities or EDEs exist and have existed for a very long time. They are the cause of a lot of depression, suicides, evil things, terrible things that people do to each other. I think they have infected politics. They've infected Hollywood. They've been, I think they probably started Hollywood, quite frankly. You look at the history of Hollywood. They are in everything. Now, I know that sounds quite crazy in a way, but they're also responsible for murders. But they don't murder people because they can't. They get other people to murder people. So really, what they do is they hijack your own free will, and nothing, absolutely nothing, can take your free will from you. But they are very good at tricking you into handing it over, or they will trick you in a reward to hand it over. So have you ever heard the like pop stars and rock stars saying things like, "Oh yeah, I signed my soul away to the devil for this,"
Yeah,
and
of
they
course, yeah.
sometimes they joke about these things. What they're doing is they're not signing a soul over, they're signing a free will over, but they don't get the difference. They are handing the free will over to get success, to get the money, get the notoriety, to get that luck, to suddenly be a musician struggling for 7 years, and then one day all the doors just start opening. That's a bit weird. How does that just happen? It's not just a lucky A&R guy being in the right place at the right time. These entities are very good at making things happen and work because they've got full control of things that we don't have control of. But time and space for them is a very different arena to us. Our view of time and space is very linear, very basic. We've got a past, present, and future, and we think that's how it goes. We just, hold out that straight line of string. We've got the back of it, we've got the middle of it, we've got the front of it, and that's how we view time, which is a shame because it's not built that way. You take that piece of string, you turn it to a big ball of string, where every part is touching itself, and that they're all leaving a little impression. That's time. It's all just happening, all at once, all at the same time, in different dimensions. So these entities are able to manipulate our dimension, as well as having the power to manipulate other dimensions. So they can make, if you are, imagine this, you're a struggling actor in Hollywood. You've given up all your worldly possessions to fly out to Hollywood and think, well, I'm going to be big, but then you spent the last 3 years, serving up burgers and chips. You're pretty down. You've got talent. You've always believed in yourself, but it's just not working for you. Then you find yourself either drugged up or drunk, complete, and then crying and screaming for some sort of, break. Oh, just let me have let this happen, and I'll do anything. Just want this to happen, and I'll do anything. At that very point, that rock star, pop star, movie star. And I've just said star, star, star deliberately there, by the way, because the illumination. That's why the word star is there. At that very point, that person is allowed an EDE to attach and is given up that free will. And then there'd be an internal dialogue. Now, the person will wake up the next morning from their drunken stupor or their drug-induced state and think the whole thing was some sort of horrible dream, or oh my God, what happened last night? And they won't probably even kind of clock it, but it's already too late. And then strangely, their agent are ringing. Oh, yeah, that part you didn't get, actually, they rang back up. The other guy, I can't do it. He says, and things would just start happening. And before you know it, you are that pop star, rock star, movie star. You're the world's at your feet and things are happening, but at a price. And I mean, I use like Robin Williams as a pure, a good example. Well, it's not, there's no good example here because there's no winners. Robin Williams is just a tremendous actor. He had literally the world at his feet. He could walk into a room and it'd light up in a stadium on his own. His films were just amazing. Everyone loved Robin Williams. But the guy suffered from mental health for a very long time. He inwardly, he was, being destroyed, to the point, unfortunately, the poor guy obviously took his own life. As we all know, it's sad, his sad demise. I think it was, 2014 he died. So anybody who knew him would say he was a loving guy, he loved his family, but he had his demons. And when people say, oh, that guy there, and they have their demons, they have been quite literal there. Well, again, don't like to use the word demon, because demon empowers them, so let's take that off of them. But they do have their demons. They, at some point, gave their free will over at a price, because that EDE will then make you successful, but will take your free will from you, and you will continually suffer to the point where you are contemplating suicide. You are never happy. You are isolated. You've got £50 million in the bank, but you're unhappy. You don't feel you've got any real friends. You think everybody's on the take. You're paranoid. You can't stop the drink. You can't stop the drugs. You can't stop the maybe sex addiction, just to try and get some endorphins to make you feel better. You're a mess. You're a famous rock star. You're a mess on drugs, and you can't trust anybody. You've got to start thinking to yourself, what the hell is going on? Because I tell you what, if you and I had £50 million in the bank and were famous in some capacity, and we didn't go and give our free will away, I think we'd have a different life. It'd be very fulfilled, very happy, because you'd be in a position to help people, help your family and your friends, and you'd just be more wiser with your money. But these guys don't. They got, and there's many examples. You've got Johnny Depp, Brad Pitt, Jim Carrey, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, all these people that have had depression and have issues and quite openly admit it. But there's something behind this. So always say, if any of those are listening and any of this resonates with them and they've had enough of being, having their life force literally sucked out of them, then give us a call. We can sort this out. And you
Sure.
don't need an exorcism.
Yeah, well, Johnny Depp is
Because
a regular
it's not
listener, so
religious.
luckily,
Right. But this can be sorted out. And people say, well, how do you do that? That there are methods, but it's all about a lifestyle change, first of all. First of all, is accepting the fact that you do have an ED attachment. And then you have to go back to try and pinpoint the day or the memory of when that happens. We haven't got to undo that, because you can. The good news here is, you can rip up the contract. It can stop. And this is not just for famous people, by the way. And I'm using that as an example, but it happens to everybody in everyday life. All those things I said about being isolated and depressed and feeling not good enough, the voices in your head telling you to do stupid things or telling you that you're not worthy, you're overeating, you're morbidly obese now because you just can't stop because you're trying to get that endorphin kick, aren't you? You're trying to make yourself feel better for a few minutes. It happens to everybody. Many, many people are victims of these things. And I think it's about time it stopped. And that won't stop until the medical profession are brave enough to admit that these things not only exist, but are in our everyday lives, and that we need to get rid of them. And we can. So we can cut the contract. So we have to go back to the point where, the EDE found you. So if it wasn't to become a movie star, maybe you went through a traumatic experience and it happened then, or like a loss of someone. It's generally when you're at a very low point, because you need to be on that low vibration for them to enter. If you're happy and positive and, just aware, and this is not going to happen to you because you vibrate differently, and that you're not food to them. These things, you are food, like in the Matrix. They say you're a battery. You are literally a battery to feed energy to these entities, and that's all they are. And they are weak. They are the masters of a mimic. They can impersonate any voice in your head, by the way. So if you've ever heard anybody's voice, these things can use that same voice and repeat, use it. So you think you are talking to your dead relative, or Marilyn Monroe, or Elvis Presley, or Bruce Lee, some legend. You think, oh, Bruce Lee is channeling himself through me. It's not Bruce Lee, guys. I'm sorry. It's an EDE, and they are big liars. And they lie, lie, lie. And that is the best way they've hid themselves. Because by denying the devil, they hide. So, but we've got to take away the words devil and demon and Lucifer and, the big books of demonology. I've got one on my bookshelf about all the demonology, all the different beasts that are meant to exist. Even Jesus Christ, strangely, is in it. I found a bit weird when I opened that up. But all the demons are in this book of demonology that I have. But to me, it's an encyclopedia of the different personalities that these ADEs have used to trick people into doing their will. So this is the hypothesis. And to prove it, we need more victims to come forward to us. And we will look at how we can remove the contract, how we can make their lives better. We can't promise miracles. We're not miracle workers, but we won't be using any religious implements or techniques, because it's not needed. The religious side of it, it's the thing that just keeps it going, really. And there's a good example that there's a documentary on Netflix. I think it's still on there, called The Devil on Trial. So if you can go and see that, go and watch that. But it's about a guy called David Glatzel back in 1980. He was a kid at the time, 11-year-old kid, who apparently got possessed by the devil. He was having convulsions and fits and things, and shouting out some really vulgar things to his mother and all that sort of stuff. Ed and Lorraine Warren, the famous demonologists at the time, I'm cutting this very short, but got involved, and they have a very strong Catholic background. So they obviously went through the Catholic Church to go through exorcism for this poor child, which to me is just incredibly wrong. But there you go. So they've done that, and they dragged the poor kid into a church, and they'd done the whole ritual over him. And David's sister was there, and David's sister's boyfriend, called, was his name's Arn? Yeah, Arn was there, who was 19 at the time. And they're watching this whole thing happening, and it apparently is very distressing. The boy's in a lot of distress and a lot of pain. And Arn, being a 19-year-old, said, shouted out, "Take me on, I'm here, take me on," to try and get this demon out of the poor child. And apparently at that very point, little David stopped and calmed, and everything was fine. Everything seemed to be okay. But even Ed and Lorraine said at the time to Arne, "You should not have done that." Because even though I don't kind of agree with all their techniques, they did actually gather a lot of information, and some of it is correct. You'd never say to an EDE, "I'll take me on." Because all you're doing is just inviting them in. And it's like, that old saying, never invite a vampire through your door. It's the same thing. Don't ever invite an EDE into your body, into yourself. It's just a stupid thing to do. But Aaron thought he was doing the right thing, brave 19-year-old. But 6 months later, he's there with his girlfriend and a friend of his, just watching TV. And Arn then goes into a weird state of trance, which he said in his words, he felt he was being possessed. And next thing you know, Arn is in jail covered in blood, because He murdered his friend, stabbed him to death. Because this ADE left David, went into ARM. Remember what I said about time? No time to them. 6 months is nothing to an ADE. So the ADE basically said, okay, I'll do that, but I will still have what I want. And that means putting an innocent man in jail in a horrible place for a murder, which is a horrible thing that he's got to live with. Imagine the trauma that waking up, finding a knife in your hand and your friend stabbed to death is going to inflict on you. So poor old Arne was jailed. He was deleted in 1986. He only served about 5 years. The whole documentary goes into why. He got away with manslaughter in the end, I think, because I think it was the first case that was heard where the devil was used as a defense. I think that's why it made history. And that, to me, serves or backs up my hypothesis even further to show you that these things are patient, do have a control over people, and they can't harm you and I. They have to get somebody else to harm you and I. But if you know they're there, and you listen to what I've just said tonight, and you've gone, that kind of makes sense. You don't have to believe a word I say. That's entirely up to you. So to your prerogative and your free will, more importantly. Okay. But if it does resonate with you, then we've got to think to ourselves, what are we going to do about this? And I think it's time for action, because I think these ADEs have embedded themselves in every part of our world. I mean, look at the state of our world right now. It is probably the most lowest vibration it's been in a long time. And I don't think that happens by pure chance. There's conflicts everywhere. We had to go through that whole pandemic rubbish for 3.5 years. People still are in fear of it, still walk around with a mask on, which they don't work, by the way. Well, that's another subject. The fear, I mean, it's divided families. I used to have friends that I've known for 30 years. I don't have friends anymore. Most of them have just decided that I was some crackpot who's trying to convince them to look after themselves and not listen to what they've been told, and not to feel the fear and not take it on board. But they did not do that. They decided to listen to the government's advice. Was it right at the time? Who knows? And there's that inquiry going on, but I'm not going to go into that in too deeply. But it is a good example of how we've been divided, and that's how you conquer, isn't it? That's the first rule of warfare, is divide and conquer, and that's where we are. And you've got to think to yourself, are we as humans bad people? I don't believe we are. We come from a very strange place. If you look at the beginning of our existence, back to Sumerian texts, you go and look at that stuff. And all that stuff about the Anunnaki and all of that DNA manipulation, making like a workforce and all that. If you look at that, we come from a very traumatic place. But then we found a bit of peace for a while, and then it all went wrong again. Because I think these ADEs were just left to go rogue on us. And they are very intelligent. Although they're weak here in our dimension, and they're liars and they're good mimics and stuff, but they are very intelligent. We can't take that away from them because they know how to interact in different dimensions that we don't. And we've got to get better at that. We've got to understand it more. And we're not going to get better at that if we keep saying that people are just mad because they've got voices in their head. That's not getting better. We're not going to get better by making a pill to make a schizophrenic feel better. Pill's not going to make them any better. The pill is just going to subdue them, which means that their receptors are not kicking in. And yeah, the ADE might be less reactive. It might think, well, I'll come back later. Because to them, like I said, there's no time element. So, but ultimately, it's not helping the human person. It's not helping them. And they just end up in a miserable state. We've got to get away from all this stuff. We've got to start looking at what can we do. So, if you're a multi-£1 million actor and you listen to this going, well, how can I rip up the contract? There's a price, my friend. I don't mean from Sophie Agency. The price is, once you decided that you're not going to have this anymore and your life starts turning around, you start becoming more positive and closing the door on the ADE and denouncing that ADE, saying, I'm ripping it up, you're no longer allowed this, I have my own free will, all that stuff. You probably won't get those phone calls from your agent anymore. That's going to stop. So you've got to be very wise and going, I've got 50 million in the bank. I think I can live on that for the rest of my life because my career is probably not going to go any further now, and it probably won't. But that's the price you've got to pay. You've got to think to yourself, is it worth all this fame? And I've got to keep working till I'm in my 60s and 70s and 80s. I mean, look at the rock stars that are still gigging in their 70s, still doing it. You think you should have put your feet up a long time ago. You should have been enjoying your wealth and your circumstances that you find yourself in. But they're not. They're still working. They're still out there. And some would say, well, it's because I genuinely love it. Great, but there's a certain age, you just got to think, fella, you've got to stop. Barry Manilow's still going. My wife went and saw him a few months ago in London. Still going, but I can tell he genuinely loves it. I saw they do love it, but there's got to be a point you've got to go, right, is it enough? Am I enough? And then they want, and they've had health problems and they've all had cancers and all sorts of terrible things. I mean, look at Bruce Willis, the disease he's now got. And it's just, that's not how we think we see these invincible people going, is it? And yet they do. And I've seen many healers as well, just in the real world, just people that stand up and heal other people, giving all that energy away to others who then end up themselves being very ill with cancers and things. I've seen clairvoyants who give out their gift, make people feel good about the world for an hour, and then they go home and then they're depressed. They're isolated. They don't really have a quality of life, or they get ill. There's a theme, and the theme is, if you're maybe you're maybe your clairvoyant's got this sudden gift. Maybe he had it when he was born. Maybe it happened after a traumatic experience. You suddenly woke up and had this realization you could hear voices and be a clairvoyant, and you do. And I'm generally going to say that a lot of clairvoyants probably do have a gift. They are feeding you information that is real, because the EDE that attached themselves to that clairvoyant ages ago is giving them real information, but at the cost of that poor clairvoyant. So if you go and see a clairvoyant and you think they're really good at giving you something, really value that, because that piece of information that they gave you to make you feel better for 5 minutes is at a cost to that poor clairvoyant. Does that make sense? There's a
Everything in life
price
has a
for
cost,
everything.
doesn't it?
Yeah. And I find it very ironic that healers are the ones that seem to get sick. And it's because they're just giving themselves away all the time, a bit by a bit by a bit. And they may have that gift from an EDE, or it might be, and I'm not saying every clairvoyant or healer is possessed by an EDE. I'm saying that some are, some aren't. So the ones that aren't, they probably were born with that ability. And the way you can tell the difference is that that healer or clairvoyant doesn't have a chaotic lifestyle. They're not depressed. They're very positive people to be around. They're not secretly going home and then cutting their wrists. They're not doing these things. And they're probably the ones that don't have these attachments. They've got a real gift, because it is an ability that we all have. It's something we all have. We don't need to go and ask an EDE to give it to us at a price of our health and well-being. We don't. So, yeah, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying every clairvoyant and healer are all possessed by bad things, but I think that some are operating in that space and they don't realize it. And what I'm saying to them is that, maybe you need to think about looking at it, think about this. Maybe you'll start to get better. Maybe your life won't be so chaotic. Maybe your circle of friends will increase again. Maybe you won't feel so isolated. Maybe you won't overeat or take those drugs or drink too much. That's where you can tell if you've got that EDA attachment, is that you've just got to look at your lifestyle. And it's separate to see if we've got anybody come to us like that, we look at their complete lifestyle, not, oh, you're hearing voices, okay, what's that about? We look at what do they do for a living? What's their friends network like? What's their family like? Are they on any medications? We look at the whole picture, because we're going to have to work out a kind of a program for them to lift them out of it, so they're going to be vibrating at higher frequency. Therefore, the EDD has to go away because it won't like you anymore because you're not feeding it anymore. As soon as you've got no value, they're gone. And somebody else once asked me, can you kill them? I don't think you can kill something that doesn't have a physical ending to it. We all have a physical avatar that we all live in, but we also know that we're spiritual beings inside. We know that. You can't kill your spirit. So I don't think these things can be killed, but they can be denied. And the more we deny them, maybe one day in 100 or 200 years later, when all this has come out, and all this is accepted as real, the EDEs will actually leave the entire planet alone and actually go find somewhere else, because Earth will be no good to them anymore. That's what I think will, that's a long-term shot.
Sounds good.
That's
So,
one hypothesis.
another thing I saw on the site is the traumatic time impressions. Do you want to give a brief overview of
Yeah.
that?
How do you
No, carry on. It's quite fascinating, this as well.
Yeah, so again, it's all related. What I said about that ball of time being all sort of a big bundle of string that's all touching strands of itself all over the place. So each one of those, if you just imagine one bit of string over another, creates an X, doesn't it? A crossing. So it's a point of contact where, if you now put it into easier terms, every point of contact is a portal or an access point. Whatever word you want to use, whatever's more comfortable for you, just use it. But so there's loads of access points within our dimension and other dimensions. So I'm not going to go into quantum physics and stuff too much, but it'll kind of make all that make sense. So traumatic time impressions, this is a new hypothesis that we're actually creating a video for to try and explain what it is. But the video won't be out for a couple of months yet because I'm moving house and I want my new studio done first before I re record it again. But what it is, it's an explanation for most ghost sightings. So I do say in my video, we don't believe in ghosts, which will probably shock a lot of people listening to this channel. We don't believe in ghosts, okay? We believe there's explanations for the apparitions that you're seeing. I'm going to call it an apparition because then it takes away any spirit connection to it. I'm not saying I don't believe in spirits, by the way. That's different. I'll come to that. But let's look at some examples of what does traumatic time impressions mean. So the TTI, the first started forming this hypothesis based on a few stories from famous battles from the past that people have seen. Again, like the ghostly battles of the Battle of Edge Hill, 1642, for example, which is a famous battle. It's the first civil war in England, 1642. King Charles I against the Parliamentarians. It happened in Warwickshire in the UK, and it consists of about 27,000 men, all got together on a field and went a bit of a fight. It's the basics. And 1,000 people lost their lives that day. I'm actually surprised it wasn't more than that, quite frankly, but 1,000 is still 1,000 too many, quite frankly. So this happened in October of 1642. Wound on a few months, of December the 25th, that's Christmas Day of 1642, 1 o'clock in the morning, shepherds and other townsmen are out tending their fields, and they hear the sounds of drums, musket fire, horses galloping, and they think, what on earth's that? And then they see with their own eyes the whole Battle of Edge Hill happening in front of their very eyes again as apparitions. And they were so convinced they were seeing it and hearing it that they were frozen to the same point for 3 hours. Now, you live in the UK like me. December at 1 in the morning is cold. You're not going to sit in a field for 3 hours for no reason, frozen to the spot, thinking that you're going to get your head chopped off by a ghostly apparition that's wielding a sword and a horse. But these guys are so frightened that they were transfixed. It faded. They then ran off to a town called Kyneton, which is quite far up, where they woke up the first the minister and the justice of the peace at the time. We've just seen this, and they knew the shepherds. They knew they weren't drunkards and stuff. So even though it's Christmas Day, the very next day, the minister and the justice of the peace and more town people actually went out to that field at the same time the following day, the following morning, I should say. And guess what? It happened again. They all saw it this time. They all saw this grisly battle playing out in front of them. And the townsfolk just ran home, apparently, locked themselves in their doors and prayed to God for forgiveness and protection and all sorts. It must have been a bit of a terrifying thing. So it happened twice in a row. This got back to King Charles I because the town was in turmoil. They now thought that the whole town was going to be overrun by ghouls and ghosts, going to come for them. And back then in 1642, there's a lot of superstitions and, a lot of stuff going on anyway. And of course, war was happening, civil war. So King Charles I thought about it, and the following weekends, the same thing happened again on the Saturday and on the Sunday again, because it was a Saturday and Sunday the first time. It was literally a week later, it happened again. So after hearing of that, King Charles sent six army officers down to investigate and to tell them to, I think he said something like, steal the town, as in, keep them quiet and calm them. Clearly, they're all mad. Who could believe such a thing? So these six officers came down, and they again on the following Saturday, Sunday, so it's now the third weekend, they saw it. It happened again on the Saturday and the Sunday. And not only did they see that, they also recognized some of the people in the battle because some of them served in that very battle. So they recognized their friends in that battle. And they had to go back to the king and say, sorry, boss, but it's real. And they all swore an oath that to the effect that it was real. And it was all logged in the public records at the time. Which is a national archive now, but it's called something different back then, Public Records Office, I think it's called. And it's the first and only, I believe, official document that actually documented and had sworn oaths on that this ghostly event happened and was witnessed on multiple times. So when I heard of that story, I was like, well, that just proves to me what TTI is. Now, how does it fit into TTI? To me, those shepherds and those officers and those townspeople weren't seeing ghosts. They were seeing a replay of a very traumatic time or a very traumatic event. Battle is bad at any era. It was bad then, it's bad now. And if you've ever served in a served and seen your buddies injured or killed, or the aftermath of bombing, it's horrendous. Back in 1642, they were running each other through with swords. It was CQB. It's close quarter combat. They were lobbing off limbs in front of people. There was cannon fire going through people. It must have been a horrible, traumatic experience to to experience, to see, to be part of. And I strongly feel that what happens in those times of turmoil, of trauma, is that time, those two strands of string that's talking about, where it all wraps, just hits into each other, slams against the very fabric of time space, and leaves like an impression. You know, like those pin things you play where you put your hand on, and you see your hands, you know, you put objects through it. So it hits that wall, space-time, reverberates, and then it just sets out shock waves from that traumatic time. And those waves have obviously bounced back. And the strange thing about this example I gave at the Battle of Edge Hill is that they came back exactly 7 days, three times in a row, at the same time. So I haven't done my calculations yet, but I will do. I'll be working out what that means in seconds. What you know what that means. Is there a mathematical equation as to why it happened exactly 7 days
Okay.
after, and why it happened Saturday and the Sunday at 1 o'clock? It seems to be the same time. Now, obviously, we can't go back to anybody 642 and ask them exact time, unfortunately. So we can only go by what we have. But I will be asking those questions. I will be digging into it. I've already found out that if you look on our normal calendar, that 1642, the 24th of December, 1642, wasn't a Saturday. It was like a Wednesday or something. But that's because our calendar is different to the one we used then. And even then, they weren't even using the calendar they should have been using. So it's all a bit, and I've had this verified by an archives people that have given me the information. They just say, yeah, actually, it does make sense that it doesn't match up with days. So I'm not too concerned about that now, but I thought it was a red flag, but I'm quite happy it happened. So I've written to the National Archives at Parliament, and across the country to find that original document. So I can't find the original document, but I found a document written 200 years later that wrote about the account that put it down. So, you know, 18, what was it, 16? Yeah, so it was about two, it's just under 200 years later, a book was written of that account of that apparitions that happens. And that is found. I have found that. Someone has PDF'd that. I've got it. So I've got a document that's hundreds of years old that do attest to the fact that this thing happened. And when I spoke to the National Archives, they said to me, yeah, but if you read it, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, because even when you read it, you see that they're skeptical themselves. So I read it, and it's not skeptical at all. It's not. You read it, and I will be sharing the link when I do my video of the actual PDF. I will put it online, because it will be on our website as well. So you can go and download it and you can read it for yourself. It's not skeptical in the slightest. It is actually the opposite. It's saying that the officers swore an oath that the townspeople of sound mind, they basically all were believed. Now, the fascinating thing for me, and why this is not residue energy, by the way, the people go, oh, that's just residue energy. You can't just say something's residue energy and leave it like that. Explain what residue energy is to me. And they can't. They go, well, it's just like it rebounds. No, that's not good enough. You just can't give something a label and walk away. As TTI, yes, I'm labeling it, but I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to explain it. I'm going to try and find the best proof that I can to show that it's to demonstrate it, which is going to be a hard journey. So I've got to try and get examples. That's going to be amazing. But the real thing for me is that those six officers said they witnessed the battle play in front of them and recognized people that they served with. Only 1,000 men lost their lives that day, remember? That means that they were seeing the apparitions of the living. And everybody overlooks that part. They weren't seeing the ghosts of just 1,000 people, because they'd be seeing them dotted all over the field, looking like they're doing their own little play on their own, because they would be dying at different times in different ways. They saw the whole battle, meaning they saw live apparitions of the living. So they saw 26,000 living entities on that field on six different occasions over 3 weekends. That to me is the most fascinating part of the story, not the ghosts. It's the fact that people saw apparitions of the living. So ghosts doesn't explain it. They're not ghosts. They never were. It's not residual energy. No. It's a residual energy to me. It's something that gets left behind, lingers like a bit of a frequency or bad smell. It's not something that replays. There's not the power to replay anything. So you can cut this down to a single ghost as well. You can, like the brown lady of the dark hall and all these stories you hear about this mysterious woman that walks across a pond or walks down a, the corridors of some stately home. We've all heard those stories, and she comes back wailing and all this stuff. That could be happening, but she's not a ghost. She is a TTI as well. Her trauma has caused her to replay. That energy she left behind is replaying. How often does it replay? I think there's a limit on it. I think that's why in Warwickshire, we've probably not seen that battle happen since. But it did happen 6 times, remember? That's quite amazing in itself. It may not happen since, and maybe the brown lady of the stately home has never been seen for hundreds of years either. But people think they do, or clairvoyants say, oh, she's here. I don't go with that, unfortunately, because what they're trying to do is tap into something that once existed but is now gone. That energy is now gone. And it probably did replay for a number of times, which is what started the whole ghost story. She probably was seen. So if you're listening to this and you can say, tell me, I see ghosts regularly, then let me know, because then I can case study it and investigate it. But I can guarantee you that ghost won't even know you exist. They won't interact with you because they don't know you're there. Because it's an impression in time. They don't know you're there. So those poor shepherds that were stuck there for 3 hours in the freezing cold, they were perfectly safe. No musket, stray musket bullet was going to take them out. But nothing would have harmed them. There was no physical energy of it. So anybody that's scared by ghosts that seem to do the same thing over and over, please don't be scared, is my message. They're not a ghost. They can't harm you. But you are seeing something supernatural. I put that in the supernatural tin because it's natural. The emphasis on the word super and natural, because it's a natural thing, and we just don't understand nature very well. That's our problem. We don't understand how, these energies that we live in every day work. I mean, we don't see our phone signals every time we make a phone call, do we? We don't see a suddenly like a beam of light going up to a satellite into the stratosphere connecting us. We don't see the pretty colours of data being whizzed through our TV aerials when we're watching digital TV. We don't see any of that stuff. We don't feel it, don't see it. And yet our boxes and our devices are decoding that into pixels onto our screen for us. So they exist. You can't deny that doesn't exist. So why on earth can't TTIs exist? It's the same thing. It's just so what I'd love to be able to do, the holy grail for me is to be able to find a way of initiating a TTI. That'd be the most perfect thing, because then I could prove beyond reasonable doubt that TTIs are real, and here's how you do it. And that would mean you could literally replay a traumatic thing in front of your very eyes. You'll see a ghost. It will play out in front of you. And if we could know if there's a way to recreate the atmosphere, the circumstances, the wave, whatever's happening, there's something in the ingredient that's making it work. Something brings it back. Something then plays it out in front of you. It's just finding that and see if it's possible. So it may not be. Maybe that trauma and that vibration collides for a few times and it never returns, ever. Or maybe you can initiate it and replay it. And if you can do that, we're now crossing into the realms of time travel. Because then you could actually go, I'm going to replay that battle of Edge Hill at will. And we're all going to see a historic event. It's almost like going back in time then to watch it again, isn't it? That would be just the most amazing thing ever. But I've got a strong feeling that the energy does dissipate and never comes back. And that's the sad thing. And the only way it survives is through our storytelling, through our books, and nowadays, because we're modern now, through our videos and TVs and films and the Chinese whispers. And that's how the ghost stories survive. So someone probably did see traumatic time impression apparitions happen, maybe once or twice, and probably never saw it ever again. But because they had such a fantastic story to tell, that story continues throughout history. That kind of makes sense of where we are with that.
I mean, it's all fascinating, and I mean, you give a good account for all these things, and I'm sure it's keeping you busy looking at all this, isn't it, for the
It is.
Sebiosi.
So,
But yeah, I wonder if before we come towards the end, I wonder if you want to go back to talking about the Sebiosi, where you think it's going, how to join, and just kind of close up a bit more on that.
So just to tell in the TTI, I'm not saying I don't believe in spirits or poltergeist activity and stuff like that. I
Sure.
do. They're different things, and they're probably relatable to EDEs, to be honest with you. But okay, so I'm not saying there's no such thing as an intelligent spirit, but again, bear in mind EDEs. Okay, yeah. So CEPI agency. So we are. I've got a few officers now. I call them the CEPI officers. We have a kind of a rank structure like the policeman would do. So you can join a CEPI agency as an investigator, as an officer. You get trained in how to take witness accounts and how to do interviews. So you start as a potential CEPI officer. And then once you're trained, you then get your ID badge, your lanyard, your T-shirt, all that stuff. So literally, you get the T-shirt, and then you become a fully qualified CEPI officer. And that means you can own cases, investigate things, get onto STORM, which is our database, and upload information. So you can become an officer, or you can join CEPI as a researcher. Oh yeah, also CEPI officers are DBS checked, by the way. And because we're not funded by anyone, you have to pay your own fees for that. So you have to pay for your own ID badge and lanyard and T-shirt and DBS checks. It's about £85. I think it's £20 less spare that I will use because I give hours of training as well. So that's it. I don't make loads of money out of it. There's only five of us, so the five six of us. Sorry. So yeah, I'm not making money out of that. But researchers don't need to be DBS checks. They don't have to pay for anything either because they're used for their knowledge. So if you want to become a researcher, you've got to have some kind of skill set. Like you've got to be good at something. Like maybe it's you're good at video editing, audio. You're good at IT. You're good at historian. You're a theologian. You're a doctor. You're a scientist in something. You've got a dis you know you're good in a discipline or something. Something that's going to be useful to the agency, or you've retired and you've done 30 years with the NHS, so you've got all these experiences as well. Something that adds value, and where I can let you go, okay, I need this investigate, I need this looked into today, please. So if I go back to the Battle of Edge Hill, I may use one of my researchers to go to ring some pubs in Edge Hill and Kyneton and say, have you guys still hearing any stories? So they go and do that for me. So it's like how the BBC will do with their journalists, investigators. They go and get other people, they go and make phone calls, and then they make the journalists on the TV look like they've done all the hard work. And in fact, they haven't. They've got a bunch of researchers gone and done that for them. But that one journalist that you see on the TV suddenly looks really intelligent and they know everything. This has all been fed to them from researchers. So we have the two sides. And the agency itself, we want to expand nationally. So we want people to join the CEPI agency. So if you're in a para investigations team already, and you feel like we want to be part of CEPI, we want to be a new branch, then we'd be looking to start a new branch somewhere else in the country. Or you want to keep your identity as your group because you spent 10 years, 20 years building it, and you don't want to lose that identity or control over it, of course. We'd love you guys to affiliate with us. Which means that we give you access to STORM. We give you access, like the CEPI officers have, to upload your incidents and see what's on there too. So you can start, it's all that sharing the information. Because the one thing that is annoyed me the most about most groups, they're all, don't get me wrong, they're all well-meaning. They all mean to do the right thing, but they all work alone. They're all siloed. They don't share the stories. They don't share the experiences properly. They don't share their investigation techniques with anybody. Some in fact may keep it secret. Should not be a secret. The separate sheet are going to define a standard set of investigation techniques. We're going to document them, and we're going to encourage it in the training. And why? Not because we want everyone to do exactly the same as us, but because we need to ensure that everyone's doing the same thing so it can be documented properly. And therefore, if it ever gets scrutinized by academia, we don't fall down the first hurdle where all our evidence is flaky. Because if we're all doing the same thing in the same way and it's scrutinized to the inch of its life, then at least we can say this is best evidence. This is how it will be presented in a court of law. It'll be familiar to those people. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get everybody to work together, to share the information, to document what they do, and to share that information across the globe. So if you don't want to be a separate agency branch, please at least consider affiliating with us. And we don't, you can benefit from our training and from our media stuff that we have, and anything that we can give, we will. And that's our intention. We just want to get out there. We want to make load of videos, so hopefully we can get an income stream eventually, so I can pay my officers' expenses. Or I can, the ultimate dream is that we make millions and millions of pounds one day from videos and books and films, whatever, and then the separate officers are fully paid operatives. That's their full-time job, is to investigate this stuff, because that's what it needs. It needs serious time, not done as a hobby. Doing it as a hobby, and working all individually like we are, is exactly why we're getting nowhere. So the other option is, don't join us, don't bother with us, and then all the information that you have and experiences you have is wasted. It's going to go nowhere. It's going to serve no purpose. So that's my justification to say, become a branch of us or affiliate with us at the very minimum. But please share the information. So that's the passion. And I think that's what stands us out completely differently, is that we've got a power investigations arm. We've got the new hypotheses side of us where we're investigating that. And we've got the side of us where we are trying to encourage the sharing and collaborative working with everybody else across the globe. So yeah, I want to see CEPI expands in that way. But we're starting off small. We're just trying to like build our foundation at the moment, and just do as many investigations we can, and do the research. So yeah, that's where we are right now.
Yeah, well, I'll add links below, and yeah, it's been really fascinating. Thank you for your time, and I
Thank
wish
you.
you all the best with the CEPI agency going forward.
Yeah, I've got not. I'm not delusional. I know it's going to be a hard road. It's going to take time. You know what? That's fine. But yeah, but we appreciate coming on shows like this just to be able to spread the message really, and get that exposure out there, and hopefully we'll just get some everyone being sort of working well together. That's what we need. Just need that the egos removed. And that data to start flowing and the information to be shared, and I think we'll be in a better place in the next 10 years.
Yep, well said. Thank you.